Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello, and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience. Today we have a sweet 16th guest in Ruel Gaviola. I'll kind of get into all of the things that Ruel's doing now in just a second, but how are you doing today, Ruel?
I'm doing great. You know, Ryan, I've never had a sweet 16, so this is very, very cool and very exciting to me.
Yeah, I've kind of been changing up the numbers for the guests because it was always special. I think for like the longest time, it's like a special because all the guests are special, obviously.
Oh, thank
but
you.
But now I'm trying to play a little bit with the words, which I think ties into some of the things we're going to be talking about too.
Awesome.
So I'm glad that you're doing well, and I'm glad that you get this sweet 16th as well.
Right.
All right, cool. Starting off with a couple of introductory questions, though. You know, just I've seen you a lot of your videos all over the place, and then, you know, just poking around more and seeing all of your different outlets. I think more and more just keeps popping up. You're everywhere. So
yeah, I always like to joke around that, you know, I like to keep busy because it keeps me out of trouble. And I've always been the type. Even, you know, when I think back to the kid, I always like to do a bunch of different projects. I always have different projects going on. And I don't know, maybe it's just one of those things. I really enjoy the creative process, and it is my creative outlet as well. For so long, I worked in non-creative jobs. I was, you know, I was in tech writing, and I work for publication departments in aerospace, military, and it was very rigid. You know, it was very structured, which is great. It just wasn't for me. I learned that over the years, but I didn't really have a creative outlet until I got into board games and board game content creation, which is where I am today. And I'm very, very fortunate to do what I do.
Yeah, that's awesome that you know, kind of through your passion of board games, you found that outlet, you found the thing that makes you keep going and probably overbooked, overscheduled, kind of crazy sometimes.
Absolutely. That is a problem I do have. I'd be totally transparent. That is a thing. I love saying yes, just because I get so excited about all these different projects. And then I'll look at my calendar and it's like, oh, I have no time whatsoever. Just a funny story real quick. Over the winter break, the board game industry sort of takes its break at the end of the year. Things slow down. And during that winter break, about 2 weeks, I love baseball, and I was toying with this baseball podcast idea I have, and I still want to do it one day. It's just a nine episode season. And then I got so into it, Ryan. And then one night I was like, when am I going to record this? There was no time, but I put it on the back shelf, back burner. One day, perhaps we'll have a baseball. It was basically a baseball and board games podcast. So
That's
a project that may be returned to in the hopefully in the near future.
That sounds fun and kind of you know, I think the idea for my interviews and just like my podcast and what I want to explore is like any sort of connection. So I think that idea of finding, you know, sports and linking them to games, because obviously there are a lot of sport based games out there, is a fun little thing to go down. So
yeah. And before I always look at my life before I got into modern board games. So I got into modern board games in 2015, so I'm celebrating my ninth year in the hobby now. And before that, I was a diehard sports fan. I root for my LA Dodgers, baseball, the Lakers, anything LA or Southern California. That's who I'm rooting for. And when I got into board games, I just through the relationships I've developed and people I've met in the industry, I realized there's a lot of folks that are into baseball, and I have these conversations with them at conventions or wherever we meet. And I was like, there's a lot of people into baseball. Why not do a baseball podcast that we focus on board games and baseball? Anyways, that's a whole different thing. I haven't even, that's an idea I hope to return to one of these days.
Oh, neat. Yeah, it sounds fun. Maybe in the future, once you get all these like more and more projects where you're up 22 hours a day, just constantly recording.
Yeah. When we discover the 48-hour day, then I think I'll kind of start working on that.
All right. Well, I'm nonetheless, whether it's next year, 5 years down the line, I'll hold you to it because it sounds super interesting.
Nice. Thanks, Ryan.
But speaking of some of the things that you are currently doing, so you have your own channel. You co-founded Tabletop Live with the Brothers Murph. You do videos with Rotto and Good Time Society. Is there anything else in that lineup that I'm missing that you're pretty actively engaged with?
Those are the big ones. I really, again, I always like to, as I said earlier, I like to stay busy, keeps me out of trouble, but I truly enjoy the work that I do. It's one of those things where I am very fortunate to say that I absolutely love my job. It doesn't feel like work. There are times when it is a grind, but I mean, I get to play board games for a living, Ryan. It really, for me, it doesn't get much better than that. Having said that, there are times when it is work. It is not easy to do this. And I realized that right off the bat because I was, as I learn games, it's one thing to learn a game, it's one thing to play a game, but then it's a whole different thing to present that game either in a written review or a podcast or a playthrough on or a live stream on Twitch or YouTube. Very different skills, very different ways to approach gaming. I got my start in gaming right around the time of, so it was 2015 year I got into the hobby. I went to my first open game night at a local comic book store, September 2nd, 2015. I always remember that date. That's like my anniversary date. I like to think about. I had a few months prior to that, I had gotten the games Pandemic and Ticket to Ride, very, gateway style games that my wife and I really enjoyed. Ticket to Ride was the one that really got us into it. But as I dove into the hobby, I was writing at the time. I was doing tech writing and also corporate training. And as I dove into it, I started looking for opportunities. Like, I think I can write about board games. And there was a website called I Slay the Dragon, which is still up, but it's not. There haven't been any reviews written in about 5 years. The guy pretty much just shut it down, but he leaves it up for posterity's sake. They gave me an opportunity to write a news column about the board game industry. And I was like, sure, I'll do that, which led to me writing reviews of games, which was really fun. And this is how I got into the industry. I had no idea. I just sort of dove into it. It wasn't a paid opportunity. It's just, hey, you can do it and reach out to a publisher. Maybe they'll send you a game. Cool. But through that writing, Ryan, I was able to, sort of build up a portfolio. And just through chance, one of my Facebook friends was friends with someone that worked for Geek & Sundry, and they were looking for writers. And I said, why not? I'll give it a shot. So I sent some samples to the editor in chief there. They got back to me right away. They assigned me like six stories. It was going to be a series on talking to different board game store owners across the US and sort of getting their story. And I really enjoyed that. It was just making that connection between, hey, how do you go from playing board games to owning a store, right? So it was really interesting to go through that process. And I started writing for Geek & Sundry on a regular basis, which was great. And it was just a little work here and there, but it eventually led to my editor, Terry. She reached out and said, hey, would you want to be on the Geek & Sundry show Game the Game with Becca Scott? I was like, oh my gosh, yes. I'd seen the show before, but then I didn't realize that Geek and Sundry at the time they were owned by, Legendary Entertainment. So when they sent me the call sheet, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So I went to LA to the studio. It was like a full-on studio. Met Becca. She's a wonderful host. She made me feel at home and very comfortable. I had no idea what I was doing, Ryan. It was just I just showed up. I'm like, I'm here to play a game. Cool. But they fed me. I mean, it was a full-on cast meal and mic'd up and cameras like, oh my gosh, it's like being on a Hollywood set. And I had the best time and it was really fun. And just through that one experience, that totally changed the trajectory of my career. I was like, I like doing this. I like playing games and hanging out with creative people and showcasing publishers' game. And that led just to other opportunities with Geek & Sundry. They kept bringing me back. I was like, cool, they must like me. I've done a couple of episodes, and that led me to other opportunities and live streaming with different companies. And then the pandemic hit, and that was studios were closed. What am I going to do? So that's when I asked my wife, Michelle, about a week into lockdown, not even a week, maybe like 2 days in lockdown. I'm like, We're gonna be stuck here for a while. Anyone want to play a board game on Facebook Live? And she's like, sure. And then our daughter came home. She was living in LA at the time, but you know, she was going to school. The school shut down. She came back home, and so we had this family thing every night at 5 p.m. We called it Live at 5 on Facebook, and I would just pull a game off the shelf and we'd play it. I was literally using an old phone as my top-down camera. It was duct taped to a little thing I'd totally set up, and then I was using an old laptop. So it was hilarious, but we had a lot of fun, and it was a really neat way to, I don't know, maintain some sanity during the early days of the pandemic, where we had one thing every day that we could count on and look forward to. It's like, this is sort of like our family time, but also our time to connect with other folks who were like stuck at home, just like we were. So I don't know. I guess that's my sort of like my long-winded way of saying, hey, that's how I got into where I am right now. It was, you know, just I love the hobby, and I found I was fortunate for all the opportunities that were presented to me, and I just rolled with it. And once I was doing this stuff on Facebook Live, that's when Rado noticed me. And he reached out. He's like, hey, any chance you want to be on the show? I'm like, sure. And that led to not only just me guesting on his show, he guested on mine, on my channel, Tabletop Tonight, which had evolved onto a Twitch show. And then we just, you know, we struck up a friendship and chatted, and it turned out that, hey, why don't we do a show together? The R&R show live every week, and we're on episode, I think, 83 now, a bi-weekly show. It was weekly, it was monthly. It just, you know, depends on scheduling and stuff. But yeah, that's just a little bit of the some of the background of how I got here. And I think the main, I always say the main takeaway in my story, at least, Ryan, is the opportunities that present themselves. I've been very fortunate that I've had those opportunities, but I fully took advantage of them. I've any opportunity I get, I'll go full blown into it. And for good or bad, sometimes I take on too much, put too much on my plate, and that's where my wife Michelle really keeps me in check. She's like, maybe you shouldn't do this because we've got, you know, this, or you've got so many things on your plate already. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. She's definitely the sensible one in our relationship. But yeah.
Yeah, no baseball podcast quite for you yet was
Right?
that direction.
I've got a few things on my plate.
But that's oh yeah, I mean you definitely kind of knocked out some of the like kind of follow-up questions or things that I was thinking about in that story. And the kind of like a funny takeaway for me is, well, you know, I've seen some of the pictures of, you know, the Geek and Sundry set and kind of some of those behind the scenes, and you're right. It's, you know, it's like it's a full-blown studio. So doing that and then kind of coming home because you have to and having that camera and laptop set up is a funny
Yeah,
little transition, but
it was hilarious just thinking about how, you know, you go from a set with a, you know, a sound engineer, lighting engineer, camera people to me with a laptop and, you know, a phone, an old phone on a duct tape to this thing. It's yeah, but you know, that's actually something I do want to say. Anyone that's interested, that wants to get in content creation, first of all, you're not going to make money. That let's just be honest, straight up. I do things besides stream on Twitch. I do a lot of stuff that isn't seen, that you know pays the bills. But if you want to go into it, though, my number one tip to anyone out there interested in doing this type of work is, don't go out and buy a ton of equipment. You do not need, you know, fancy cameras, fancy mics, fancy lights, anything. Just use what you have. I was literally using an old phone and an old laptop that I had, and I started, and it looked like garbage, but we didn't care, and it was fun, and people were, they're pretty forgiving, especially during the pandemic. We're all stuck, so it's like, what else are you gonna watch, right? So our passion and our enjoyment of what we were doing really came through. And I think that'll drive you. If you really like it, then it's like, okay, now you'll find a way, save some money, buy a new mic, buy a new camera, maybe buy some lights. The running joke with my stream for the longest time, OBS, Open Broadcast Software, that's what everyone uses to stream on Twitch. I had no idea what I was doing. So it was always, you know, people would have these fancy digital alerts and pop-ups like, hey, so-and-so just followed you or subscribed. Michelle, my wife, literally wrote a sign, and I would just show it, like hold it up in front of us. We called it our analog alerts, like, "Hey, we got a new subscriber. Thank you." And it said "thank you" on a piece of paper. So that was the running joke, and but people responded to that. And I think if you can bring that sense of joy, and I like to call it's like our family game night brought to, you know, the internet, and we like to share that with folks, and people respond to that more than like if you're just sitting there reading something off a piece of paper. And you've got the fanciest lights and cameras, the people turn it off in a split second. But you know, it may not look the greatest, it may not sound the greatest, but people respond to joy. And that's one thing. If you're interested in getting into this line of work, or just creating videos, do so with what you have on hand. And then if you really enjoy, because it's not for everyone, it is not easy. If it's for you, then you'll find a way to save up the money to get the upgrade the equipment.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome message. Just that idea of joy, passion, and dedication, and having that be what hits the audience. I mean, that's definitely what has struck me about your work and having me come back is just a genuine feel. And I really like watching your videos all over the place.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ryan.
Yeah, of course. Okay, kind of one little backtracking question. You mentioned it a little bit, but you said that you have a lot of experience in technical writing, aerospace, military, and educational industries as well. So I guess how did that work timeline match up with your work in board games? Do you still do any of this type of work? And then do you also see any of these experiences influencing, your interests, tastes, desired experiences, or anything like that with board games?
Yeah, I was I've been a I guess a fan or I've been yeah, a fan of the written word since I was a little kid. Growing up, my mother and father both encouraged me and my younger brothers to read as much as possible. As immigrants to this country, my folks were very they were very cognizant of the fact that they spoke with an accent, and I know that for them it was a challenge. They always, I don't know, fair or not fair, they felt, I don't know. Well, I mean, they were immigrants, but they wanted their children to feel, I guess, more American by speaking perfect English. So they really encouraged that in our home. Again, I mean, I won't go into too much, but they encouraged reading and writing. I mean, one of the first books I ever remember my mom buying me as a kid was a Macmillan Children's Dictionary. I have very fond memories of that dictionary. It's like, who gives their kid a dictionary? I loved it. It had pictures. I learned what an aardvark was. That's the A, and then you go through the alphabet. So I think that love of reading for me was instilled very, very young. And also my father would take my brothers and I, brothers and me to the local used bookstore where he would, ex like, my mom read a ton. She read a lot of those Barbara Cartland romance novels. She'd read those by, the pound, basically. And then all those books, they would just be sitting there. My dad would gather them. It's like, okay, if you're done with them, let's go trade them into the used bookstore for credit. And then that would lead to me and my brothers getting all kinds of comic books for, from the credit. And that just, really, that the comic books were the biggest thing for me when I was a kid. I loved reading Spider-Man and all those the superheroes. But yeah, so from an early age, the love of reading was instilled in us, and it led to when I went to UC Santa Barbara for my undergraduate, go Gauchos. I was an English major. I also minored in Asian American Studies. So I did that. I was thinking maybe I want to. I'm not sure if I want to be going to teaching or whatever. And actually, I should back up a little bit. When I went to my community college first because I couldn't afford the 4 year community college first, I got into the journalism program. So I was the sports editor. We talked about sports earlier. I was a sports editor for my college paper for a semester, and I loved it. And I was actually on track to work at the LA Times. We had a couple of professors who had very close ties to the department there. Actually, one of our teachers was a working sports writer at the time. And a lot of the students, they would be recruited from the junior college I was at, and they would go to the LA Times. But after a semester of hanging out in locker rooms, I realized it wasn't for me. But I still love the written words. So I got into, I went to the 4-year UC Santa Barbara for my English degree, got that. And right out of college, I got a job at an aerospace company in the publications department. So that led to a bunch, eventually a tech writing thing with a couple of startups. And yeah, just writing software manuals and help guides and whatnot. And I mean, it paid well, but I wouldn't call it like creative writing, but it was, as a writer, it was great, making a living, doing these things. But I think what it still influences me today, because tech writing, it's a very specific way to write, for at least for the software we're developing. And it's very orderly. It's very, one, two, three, ABC. And I'm able to do that now. It's really helped me when I learn games, right? Because as a tech writer, I would always talk to SMEs or subject matter experts, take what they were giving me, and somehow create a guide or a user manual that the average person could understand. And it's like, hey, how do I do this on this piece of software? Oh, ABC or 123, that's the thing I was writing. And now that I create content for board games, I use those skills that I've developed over the years. Like, okay, now I know how to learn this game. Or even, I mean, the worst thing in the world in a board game is a bad rule book. But I've been able to get through most of the bad rule books through my training over the years. Like, hey, I take all the stuff that they give me and I somehow create order out of the chaos. And I'd like to think that I'm pretty good at that. I also take those skills from tech writing. And also, I used to be a corporate trainer, so it was a lot of communication. I worked with a lot of different departments, so a lot of times I was the guy that would do the presentations on behalf of my department to the rest of the company. So I'm comfortable speaking to whatever, a group of managers or employees or whatever, and basically give them the information they need. And I think that translated well to what I was doing online for playing board games, like being engaging with folks. That's the number one thing. And being able to present stuff, like, rather than just read you a rule book online, no, I'm going to show you, we're going to, talk it out, we're going to have fun with it. And having that background as a tech writer, I think I'm able to get to the point a little more succinctly. It's like, hey, here's how to play this game. I'm going to show you exactly what to do. One thing I should note is I've been doing this a few years now with Rado. He really taught me the importance of telling a story through board games. So there are channels, and again, some people respond to this. I get it, but there's a way to teach a game where, okay, here's what you do on your turn, blah blah blah. But then there's another way to tell it, like, okay, you are putting yourself, putting the viewer as into the seat of the character that you're playing or whatever. It's like, oh, I'm going down this hall, I've got a couple of choices here. What should I do? Rather than saying, oh, this is a pickup and deliver game, you need to pick up this piece and bring it to that part of the board. No, so it's a little more narrative driven. But yeah, so to this day, I feel like my background, starting with my mom buying me that dictionary, all the way to college writing, and then my professional career before board games, being a tech writer and working with corporate managers and whatnot, has all led to it's all culminated in playing into playing board games and on the internet.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that whole story, and like all of it. There's like a lot of really good information in there, and I think that overall message of kind of like being able to like borrow skills, and I think sometimes people will think of experiences as singular. It's like I did this. It's not necessarily what I wanted to do, but no matter what, you are gaining that insight, you're gaining those skills. So being able to like take them and keep using them and converting them and just like seeing that for what it is, and then like learning and growing and getting that kind of that advice from Rado as well, and just like having it all culminate in the way that you said it did. I don't know. It's like, it's just like a very beautiful thing to me.
It is. It's, and I think that's the thing, you know, as you get a little older, you can appreciate it. And I recently, just last week, in fact, I spoke at a career day for a local high school, and those, the students, they were great. They had a lot of great questions. And, I told them, you know, a lot of them, they were interested in, like, oh, you play board games for a living, but, you know, it wasn't going to be their career path. So I was trying to, you know, I told them what I did, but I also tried to give them that type of information or share that type of experience where it's like, hey, even if you don't go into my line of work, there's things that I've learned and I do that you can apply to whatever you do. And the main thing is communication. That was what I was stressing them. No matter what job you get, you've got to talk to someone, whether it's to learn how to do your job or to tell someone, like show them how to do your job, or just to meet with a boss or whatever. So I'm like, I tried to stress that it's communication, relationships, you know, and I think it's very important. So I tried to stress that to them, and hopefully, you know, if at least one kid listened, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, most definitely. And hopefully, hopefully at least one, and I would assume a bit more just due to your engaging communication skills yourself.
Right. So. Exactly.
Awesome. Okay. Well, a lot of really good things I feel like we could like unpack and talk about that even more. But in all of your talk, you mentioned, you know, your passion in English from an early age, and that's what you've done. That's what you've done like your entire life, which is awesome. And I know that at least on a few of your videos that I've seen, you've mentioned that you're a self-proclaimed word nerd.
Yeah. Yes.
One of the videos that, you know, stuck in my mind, and I know that it was more than this too, was the one where you were talking about books of time. So perhaps we'll get to that in this conversation, but mm-hmm. kind of transitioning to like a lot of the other things that you've been discussing, that power of narrative in explaining like a rules explanation for a game as well has an extra value to it. And I don't know, I guess I hadn't really thought about that, but obviously I think the people that do, you know, teach games in that most effective way don't just say, oh yeah, you pick up the pieces, you put them here, but they play within the game's framework and the stories in order to tell the story. So I guess it makes sense. It was just kind of like inherently something that I didn't like put A and B together.
Right.
But we're going to talk about, you know, narratives and stories and that with games. So that's kind of like the topic for a few questions.
Okay, great.
And the first one, this one is, I think, setting up the framework for some potential ones to come. But, you know, there are a good number of games that present themselves as books by the way of, you know, their packaging and presentation. What sort of message, or perhaps even a promise, do you think that this makes for the players?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for any game, whether it's presented as a book or not, you do have some sort of promise or message, right? I just looking at the cover. If I see the cover of, say, I mean, I'm looking right behind me on the wall here, Twilight Imperium, right? It's a huge box, first of all, and it's got all these, you know, alien looking creatures. I'm looking at that like, number one, that huge box means I'm going to be playing this for a while. It's going to take up a lot of space on my table, but it's going to be, it looks like a sci-fi game. And that immediately interests me because I love sci-fi. But a book, a game that looks like a book, if I'm looking at the cover, I'm going to assume that there's going to be some type of storytelling to it. There's going to be some sort of narrative. It's not going to be, it's probably not going to be an abstract game like chess or whatever. So those are the expectations going in. And most of the time, I'd say board games are pretty good about that, delivering on the promise that the cover offers. But other times, I've either been pleasantly surprised or disappointed in what's in the box. I The one game that I was just recently talking about is a game called Arraial. It's spelled Arraial. I believe it's a Portuguese word. But Rado had mentioned that game to me. He knows I like tile laying games, and I had never heard of it. So then when I picked it up, and it has this funny sort of cartoonish like artwork, and you look closer, it's like, oh, those are Tetris pieces that the people are holding. It's like, what the heck is this? And I had no idea what it was, and it turned out to be the closest thing to Tetris in a board game. And Michelle and I, we absolutely loved it. And I had never heard of this, but I look at the box and it almost looks like a kid's game, and it could have been easy to dismiss, I think, but thankfully we opened it up and dove into it, and it was terrific. It wasn't, and again, the book, the cover did, it didn't tell me it was going to be a book or anything. There wasn't much reading except for the rule book. It's basically a Tetris in a box, so we had a good time with that. But other games, things like, you just touched on Books of Time, which was one of my favorite games of the last year. That one, I any game that has any kind of books or words on the cover, I'm immediately interested in. And I actually used to collect games. I used to have, I don't know how many, anything to do with books, Ryan, that for a board game I would keep, because I love the theme so much. I spent a fair share of my youth at libraries, the public library. I loved it there. It's still to this day my sanctuary. If I ever just need time to sort of for myself, and Michelle knows this, I'm just going to take off and go to the library for a couple of hours and just lose myself in the stacks. And I remember years later, I talked to my mom, because I'd spent like summers at the public library. I was like, that was such a good, cool thing. Like, I mean, you always encourage us to read. And because she was working night shift at the time, she's like, yeah, it was perfect. Like, you all like to read and I need to sleep. So it was like free babysitting at the library. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. So that's why you drop us off at around lunchtime. Then, my dad would pick us up when he got off work. But again, another way that the love of reading was instilled in me. So yeah, as far as books and the covers, I would anything to do with books interests me, it piques my interest. And Books of Time was probably the latest and greatest one, where you're literally constructing books, right? They give you the little binders, the ring binders, and you put pages into it. I thought that was such a cool take on tableau building and, taking actions from this book. It was so neat. Michelle and I really enjoyed that one. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't think it really, I mean, people liked it. I don't think it's gotten enough praise. I think it's so neat. But maybe it's geared towards our us word nerds, maybe. I'm not sure why.
I'll kind of work backwards because you had a lot of good stuff in there. But yeah, I think I saw you talk about it first, which is why I started looking into it. Then I know, based on you talking about it within one of Rado's roundups, he talked about it or said that he needed to check out, ultimately did, and kind of wants it expanded upon too.
Yeah.
He has that big hope too. So hopefully that's the case and keep adding to
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I'm glad he ended up liking it. But even after I played it, I was like, ah, this is probably not Rado definitely skews a little more heavy into the heavier games. And I figured it'd be a little light for him, but I loved it. It's definitely the weight of a game that I really enjoy. I do enjoy lighter stuff. I enjoy heavier stuff too, but I feel like that's probably my sweet spot, that sort of gateway plus type experience.
And a really funny note too. So, not to get too much into like my release schedule, because that's not particularly engaging or anything. But I just had a really fun conversation with Luis Aguas Vivas, a writer for primarily video games, but he's been doing some work with the Homo Ludens channel and Fred Serval as well.
Oh, cool.
And we basically had an entire episode where we talked about like Tetris related things. So Tetris video games and board games and just kind of like thinking about Tetris in the perspective of life. So
I love
that
it.
is, it's not out, but so that's what my technically next episode
Oh,
is.
I
And then
can't
he
wait to
brought
hear
up,
that.
Yeah, and you brought up this game, and I don't, it's not one that I've heard of, so I'm definitely going to look into that
Yeah.
more.
Yeah, I think it's still in print. It was Pandasaurus that had it, and I know they were like really low on stock at the time. I'm not sure if it's going to be reprinted or not, but I feel like it should be. It's such a terrific game.
All right. Well, I mean, you definitely have me excited, so I'll look and I'll probably try to like scoop it up before there aren't any more copies if
Nice.
there are still
Well,
some around.
my work here is done.
Yes, you're done. Yeah, the only other thing that I was kind of thinking, yeah, everything that you said in your response definitely resonates with me. One type of game that I mean, I don't have a ton that present themselves as books, but I think social deduction games sometimes do that. So I know that whole Dark City games from Facade, those are all little books. And then obviously, I think Blood on the Clock Tower is just like a massive
Yeah.
book.
That's the one I still need to play. I have not been able to play that yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about Blood on the Clock Tower.
Yeah, I just got that in, and I think there's probably some backstabbing in there, so I have kind of a an Ides
Yeah.
of March party set up for get a few more weeks to prep for that.
Nice.
Awesome. Very cool. So kind of moving forward a little bit, what are some of your favorite games that are based on books? Which ones capture the essence the best? And then do you also feel like there might be any books that are based on games that maybe do away with their connection to their source material in any way, but you still just like the game?
Yeah. Oh, great question. So here's I don't know. Here's my dirty little secret. As much as I love word games and games about books and whatnot, I don't think I have like a favorite board game based on a book. I tend to like the sort of like the books in like as an abstract concept, right? So like Books of Time, we were just talking about that. That's a game about books, but it's not specifically about something. I never read Dune. I know that's as a sci-fi fan, I need to read that. I think maybe I just have horrible memories from that 80s movie, the David Lynch thing. I may have nightmares from that. Yeah, like Lord of the Rings. I enjoy Lord of the Rings, but I'm not like a super hardcore fan. I'm more of a Star Wars type of guy. But games like Ex Libris or Fire in the Library, they're about books, but more of an abstract. Like Ex Libris, it's a really fun game where you're just sorting books, like in a library, and it's like a puzzly type of game. Fire in the Library, it's a push your luck game where you're trying to save your books from a fire, which I really liked. But actually, I should say this. So, okay, here's a couple of examples of things I really enjoy. They're super light games, but I think the presentation is phenomenal. It's for I'm thinking three off the top of my head here. They're all in the same series, the adventure book series from Ravensburger. So you have Princess Bride adventure book, you have the Lord of the Rings adventure book, and you have The Wizard of Oz, right? So properties based on obviously very huge movies, but also book based. And the books themselves are really neat. They're almost like they're cardboard. They're very thick cardboard. You open them up, and then each chapter you're going to play through. So for the Princess Bride, it's basically a pick 'em and deliver game, but you're going through the story, and it's really well done. I think it's fantastic the way they do this. And fans of those properties, I mean, I've loved them all, and I think they do such a great job of capturing the feeling. Now they're not like an exact replica of the book or the movie, and they're not the heaviest games, but I think as far as capturing the spirit, and any fan of those IPs will really enjoy those. I'm a huge fan of those. And as I'm spitballing here, The Adventures of Robin Hood, I think it was 2 years ago that came out. That was a fantastic game. I mean, the book that came with it was like a choose your own adventure book. But they had some point-to-point movement on the board, and then you would go along and you know reveal certain spots on the board that would relate to the book. The book itself, Ryan, was oh, it was like this hardbound book. I mean, it could be at home in any li home library. It was a beautiful presentation, but it was basically choose your own adventure, and then with board game me mechanisms, and it was really well done. I greatly enjoyed that. And again, I wasn't really I don't think I've ever read The Adventures of Robin Hood. All I remember is the Disney animated Robin Hood, which I loved as a kid. But that was a lot of fun. And ones that I really enjoy that aren't based on any IP or anything, but their own original thing are the graphic novel adventures that Van Ryder Games puts out. They are very much similar to the Choose Your Own Adventure books that we grew up reading as a kid, but they are graphic novels. So you look at the first couple of pages, sets this tone, sets the story, and then it'll say, what do you choose to do in this panel? And then it will direct you to another page. And as you're doing that, you're flipping around the book. You also have a character sheet. So you're going to have health points. You're going to have, currency and whatnot. So it's a game within a book, and I love that. It reminds me of game those type of adventure books we had as a kid, but just really done in a much better, I think, presentation as far as the type of the quality of the book, the art and whatever. Love those. So that's literally a book that's a game. You could, I mean, I've carried it on flights before, and I'll just play it on, on my airplane tray, my seat tray there. So, wow. As far other games that I think storytelling wise or book wise, like I think of Fury of Dracula. I remember the Dracula movies, of course. I think I'm pretty sure I read the original Stoker novel in college as part of a sci-fi class. But the Fury of Dracula, fun hidden role or hidden movement game. I thought that was even though it wasn't, a direct translation of the book, it was still gave me that feeling, captured the feeling. It was like, hey, Dracula's out there, he's killing all these people, we need to track him down, and Van Helsing and everyone else trying to get him. I think what for me the best of both worlds as far as like combining storytelling, narrative, a book, even though it's not an actual book, and like game mechanisms is Gloomhaven. I love that narrative, and I think it's, I mean, it's a masterpiece. I think just the gameplay, just very cool gameplay as far as cooperative gameplay and setting yourself up to complete missions and then just have leveling up characters, and you have that whole the world of Gloomhaven. Oh my gosh, I think it's brilliant stuff. And just again, just going on here, I'm thinking of Cthulhu, the H.P. Lovecraft thing. I know that a lot of people love that. I'm not really into Cthulhu, but I know that there's a lot of games based on it. I've enjoyed a few of them. Again, not really the biggest fan of the theme or whatnot. It's just not my jam, but I can appreciate what they've taken from the books and made it into a board game. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, Ryan. I don't know. Do you have favorites?
Oh, I before kind of getting to the one that probably sticks out to me most, you have a whole bunch of good examples in there. I'm familiar with all of them. I think the only one that I wasn't familiar with, I mean, some of them I've played a little bit too, some I haven't, most I haven't. But you mentioned the Van Ryder graphic novel kind of choose your own thing, and I mean, that's cool because I definitely know that Van Ryder in what they're doing with their games. Final Girl, House of Negotiator, and the detective one, City of Angels, I think, is kind of taking, genres and stories, and especially with the Final Girl, all those different boxes, takes a movie and then makes it its own little scenario. So it makes sense that they have that skill to make the choose your own type of game.
And though they're the foundation of the games, it's like Hostage Negotiator, Final Girl. The foundations of the games are very solid, and then you add on that really well done storytelling, and it's just it's such an immersive experience. Yeah, Venn Rider, they put out some really good stuff.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, so the one for me, I think this was kind of, well, early into board games, I heard about Gloomhaven, and it's like, wow, that's crazy that that's what board games are doing. But I think I probably dipped my toes into things a little bit easier, but then I was discovering more and more, and it's like, oh, there are, definitely games linked to IP, some of the popular ones like Lord of the Rings and this and that. But then I found out that there was a game that played on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea in Nemo's War, and being, an English person myself, and and having very minor experience with, well, it's a collection of, is a serialized story, so now novel that we can read. And I was like, hey, this would be a cool thing to read that first and then try out the game and just kind of see what that adds to my experience. So I did read 20,000 Leagues, and it was fine. There are definitely some really interesting elements about it, and definitely pages upon pages of fish classification too, but
Oh, I remember reading some Jules Verne back in the day in school.
yeah, so that was my introduction into Jules Verne. I'm like, it's I very very interesting, but then I played the game and I think it just kind of distilled some of those scenes, and it did some fun stuff, and obviously, kind of the moving around and fighting players as stuff is going on, like as the in between, but
And that's what's so cool about, a board game. It'll, like you said, it'll just distill like a property or a book into like all the fun stuff, right? And it reminds me of that great Elmore Leonard quote, when you're writing advice, like just leave out the stuff that people don't care about, or leave out the boring stuff, or just to paraphrase the author. I mean, his books, if you read any Elmore Leonard, I mean, I love them. They're just, it's straight up just action. And I think with some of my favorite board games based on these things, that's what the developers have done. And again, I'm just going to point back to those adventure books. I think they're great. Again, they're lighter games, but they just capture what's fun about each of those properties, right? You're not going to be reading about classifications of fish in in these games. It's all about, hey, let's move on to the next chapter. You need to complete this task. The like in The Princess Bride, you have to, you start at with the Wesley and the princess Buttercup at the stables, and then you have to complete a task, and then that you can move on to the boat, and eventually meet the Six Finger Man and Inigo. It's oh I love that game. I think it's so much fun.
That's awesome. So, probably kind of one, and kind of I had a couple or a few more, actually don't know, but one final thing, and I think it ties well into a lot of things that you've been talking about with your, vast interest in anything kind of, storytelling related, games, and that's what really like hooks you to is. Oh, where am I? I'm just re-regaging a little bit. But I know, so you talked about your interest in comics as well, and you just like, oh, and then also your Words on Wednesday work as well. It seems like the more recent one, and I didn't watch it because I saw that you introduced a graphic novel that I'm not super into graphic novels, but you were talking about Saga for a series, and that seems like a really kind of big and popular one right now too. So you're checking out everything, but I also saw that you've been backing, especially during this kind of current zine quest, a lot of different little RPG zines. So I guess the question that I have is, how much do you engage with RPGs in general, primarily doing, board game work?
When I got back in when I got in the hobby, not almost 9 years ago, I always knew RPGs were there. It's very board game adjacent. I was when I was in junior high, like a lot of us, I played D&D back in the day, but it didn't stick with me. It was I did it in junior high, then I moved on. But once I got into board games, the RPGs were always nearby, it seemed. And I actually did a few live plays during the pandemic with a couple of different streams, and it really piqued my interest. And I for me, the RPG, the solo RPGs and the two player ones that are done in zine format have a really, they're very comfortable to me, Ryan. I used to publish a zine many years ago, and that just having an RPG done in that format is so comfortable to me. Like, hey, I can just pick this up when I want to. and dive into this world and play a game all by myself. I love solo gaming. It's to me, solo gaming is almost like doing a jigsaw puzzle. It's just something to relax with either at the end of the day or whenever, and just some quiet time to yourself. And the solo RPGs really give me that sense of combining two things I love, reading and writing, and also with board gaming, right? I guess three things that I love. So having those things together in one format, and it's just so appealing to me. I love that there's ways that people can, we at the start of this, we talk about creative outlets, right? So people who write these things, I appreciate the fact that they can just put that out there in the world. And me as a consumer can say, hey, this looks cool. I'm going to try this for, it was like $2 online. Like, yeah, I've got $2 here. I can forego a cup of coffee and try this out and support a fellow creative. And I've had so many good experiences with these things, and I want to encourage that by supporting it. I think it's such a neat little thing where, again, and like any game, and this is what I love about solo gaming is it can be tough. I mean, now that we're coming out of the pandemic, it's easier to get together, but it can be tough lining up people's schedules. Like, hey, let's all have a game night. Then you got to go, okay, here, I'm going to send you a doodle form. Tell me when you're available. But with that solo or even two player RPGs, like I can just do it by myself when I feel it, and like I don't feel like it, and I don't have to, get up. I don't have to get on my, out of my bed. I can literally do it in bed and read and dive into this world for an hour and have a great experience for it. So, yeah, I'm really into I love the idea and the I love the RPG zines, Ryan. They're just so neat. And if people haven't checked them out before, like you just mentioned, Zine Quest, that's on Kickstarter, where they promote smaller publishers and designers and developers, their little pet projects, basically. So go check that out, folks.
Yeah, go check them out. Go check out some of the ones that you've backed on your Twitter, and
Yeah.
I've definitely looked into. There's one that I think it was the Bird Oracle that I was kind of hovering above.
Oh,
It's on my
yeah.
tab, so that looks super cool.
That
But
is a yeah. Definitely, yeah. If you haven't backed it, I highly recommend that. Like the author Xing Yin Kor, I'd done a panel with her a couple of years ago during the pandemic, and she is like just this brilliant mind. Game design. She's a sculptor. She does woodworking. Just a brilliant artist, and she's taking those skills into her board games. And some of her games, they're like nothing you've ever seen before. So yeah, highly recommend checking her out.
Yeah, so I was about like 98% sure that I was just going to back it sometime. This time it's open. It's like literally on one of my tabs. It's
Nice,
been there since
nice.
I saw you back it, but I've backed a couple kind of smaller ones during this time too, and it's something that I'm getting into more, kind of for the reasons that you stated, just that accessibility and being able to do a solo one, do a two player one, and wherever.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Unfortunately, have to move to our wrap-up thoughts because there's like so much good conversation, so many things that I could keep asking questions more and more and more
Oh
about.
yeah.
But we get the final couple, and my penultimate question is just any text, a game, book, movie, album, anything that has been stuck on your mind.
Oh, lately, okay, two things have been stuck on my mind lately. It's number one, the movie is Godzilla Minus One. My absolute favorite movie the last couple of years. I absolutely loved it. And it's interesting to me that I saw this and right after it, maybe 2 weeks later, a week or two afterwards, I saw Oppenheimer. So they're dealing with sort of similar time frames and subjects, but in a very different way. But Godzilla Minus One, I absolutely love that movie. Highly recommend seeing it. The other thing that's been on my mind lately, Ryan, are fountain pens. I am new to the fountain pen hobby, and I took a deep dive. So I had a friend of mine, Julie, come up recently. She's done a couple of live streams with me, and we were doing a show called the Cardboard Cafe last year, where it was just, hey, we're just going to hang out and sip some on some tea, talk about board games and play games. we did one episode and then just things didn't happen the way they were going to happen, just scheduling and everything else. So we met the other day to get back into it, and I saw her writing with a pen. She was writing notes. I was like, is that a fountain pen? And she's like, yeah. And next thing I know, we got in this whole conversation. Then, literally that night I went online and ordered my first, fountain pen. I had Michelle try it out. She loved it. I ordered her the same pen. So now I have it right here. It's the Pilot. I forget the name of Kokomo or something. I don't know. It's the Pilot, whatever. But fountain pens, oh my gosh, they're amazing. I will be spending more money on more pens real soon, Ryan. A couple of board games may not be purchased in the near future because I'm buying pens. I love these things. But anyways, yeah.
You're gonna get me in trouble.
That's what I'm here for, man.
Oh, that is great. And yeah, I'd kind of been planning on seeing Godzilla Minus One with a friend, but I know that its time in theaters was pretty short. So I think when I was like looking, it was like, hey, we'll do it in the new year, because I'm pretty sure it was kind of a December, November, December. And then I'm like, oh, check out in the new year. And then I started looking in the new year. I'm like,
Yeah,
oh.
it was. I had no idea there was a new Godzilla movie out. I know that the MonsterVerse comes out pretty regularly, but a buddy of mine, a gaming buddy, said, "Hey, have you seen Godzilla Minus One?" I was like, "What is that? I have no idea what that is." And he told me, I was like, "Oh, this is not the hot. This is the original studio Toho doing it." I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'll go see that." I told my brother. He brought his my niece along, and oh man, we loved it. We were like, I remember afterwards we saw the movie. My brother and I looked at each other, and he seriously asked me. He's like, can a Godzilla movie, is that eligible for the best picture of the year at the Oscars? I was like, it better be, because that was fantastic. And so, yeah, it was, when you get a chance to see it, Ryan, highly recommend it. It's so good.
I definitely will, and I'll definitely let you know too, when I do.
Please do. And you can write me a letter using a new fountain pen if you get
All
one.
right, I'll email you to get your address, and then I'll get a fountain pen, and then I'll write the letter. But that's perfect. I will, hold me to that too.
Absolutely.
So my very final question though is, a lot of the things that you're working on, a lot of places that you can be found, and I think on your channel you do fun things, the aforementioned Words on Wednesday. You do the games with the chess clocks too, just getting through them fast. But is there anything that you have done in that way, or are working on and putting out soon, that you kind of want to point the audience to check out, that you think this is something to look out for?
Absolutely. So I talked about Becca Scott earlier. I've worked with her for years, and we became friends. And for the last, I don't know, a couple of months, we've been developing a new show on the Good Time Society. This is going to be a show that I'm going to host with Becca live in the studio. It's called Good Morning Society. What this is a brand new show where Becca and I are going to talk about board games and share our love and passion for the hobby. We like to think of it as the Good Morning America of board games, a very, relaxed vibe. And we've got mugs already. We've got little Good Morning Society mugs with a meeple on it, and we got shirts. I'm thrilled to be working with Becca. I've the utmost respect and admiration for her. She's one of the most talented, creative, and kind people you'll ever meet. And to partner with her on the show means the world to me. It's going to premiere on February 28th. So perhaps when people listen to this episode, it'll be out already. But you can find that on the Good Time Society channel, goodtimesociety.com, and find the links there.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. That sounds like a super fun time for all the reasons that you mentioned. And
Thanks.
yeah, so I'll check that out. I'll be sure, because I think it will. This episode will be out after that first episode releases. So I'll link it. I'll link all the
Awesome.
different things you're doing, your link tree, your Twitter, and just keep. Hopefully, everybody will be like, wow, more stuff to look out for from Ruel. So.
Yeah. Hopefully people aren't won't be sick of me by then, but I'm not stopping, folks, so you're stuck with me.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to being stuck with you. I appreciate all the work that you're doing, and taking your time from that work to talk to me today.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate your kindness, and really had a good time talking to you, my friend. I hope we get to do it again sometime.
Yes, I would love that. It's been a blast.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most
wordy
podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of, is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.